I'd like to open this session with perhaps some comments from you, some observations or statements on what's happening. Why don't we take a few minutes to do that?
That, I don't think that we are the second person of the Trinity incarnated. Are we God?
Well, I think it becomes part of my belief system and my attitude that we are not, that I am not God, you know, but God dwells and lives within me and permeates my very being, and that without God I wouldn't be here. But I am not certainly the Creator, because the Creator, God, the Almighty, the ultimate mystery, is not a being like this. Not a being. And as a matter of fact, I don't know what it is, or who it is, or how it is. I know it's total and complete mystery. And in that mystery is the Trinitarian life. I don't know if that answers it, but that's
so
kind
of... Part of that mystery.
Well, I think we are mysteries, but we don't like to admit it. I don't think we like to admit that we really don't know who we are, but that's okay. Because like we don't know who God is, you know. I think the shift, the transformation is that we begin to know what we are not. As soon as that shift occurs, that we are not our feelings, but our feelings are part of the human condition. We are not our thoughts and our commentaries, that there's something greater that God has created. And then that shift occurs, then I'm ready to say, you know what, I'm a mystery. I'm not the role I play. I'm not those things. Something else is there, greater. I don't know if that answers that, but that's kind of my experience. And I think it's wonderful to be disturbed, to stir up inside of us who and what is this life all about, and why are we here, and what is God, what are we being redeemed, and how are we being saved? Those are exciting times for us.
You know, I'm very along that line. I was going to make a comment. It's interesting to me to begin, and I'm really still at the beginning of coming to realize that it, you know, God is such mystery, and God is so powerful and so wonderful, and that God is within, and that there's God in me. You know, there's a God in me that speaks of God in you. The tremendous potential for life that this opens up, that I have excluded. I didn't even pay a second thought to the possibility of all sorts of things. You know, the healing thing we talked about. Preposterous. You know, a lady who reaches out and touches a piece of cloth and is healed. In our modern society, I think that still is happening. And it'll happen more, I think, if we allow it to happen.
Right.
And say to ourselves, I do believe that it could happen to me.
Yeah.
And I've actually experienced some of that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to some more of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Frank. Anyone else? I would say that Father Thomas Keating, in his description, and I'm sure you're aware of that, you know, the chain of human beings, of humankind, you know, the evolutionary stage of the human organism, the philosophical, the psychological, and the spiritual or religious journeys, and how they're paralleled, you know, that what we are entering into, now I'm saying this, I think it's through all traditions and all religious traditions, but we are entering into the mental egoic stage. Remember the mental egoic? There's a typhonic and so on. And that as the chain of human life, we are entering into this mental egoic stage where we can reflect. You know, we're doing, hopefully, percentage of less projection. I wish that were really true, but anyway, it's the beginning. And we're taking more responsibility for our human condition of the loving it into life and embracing ourselves and therefore all others in the universe, in the world. That's what the spiritual journey is about. It's about allowing that perception to change, the attitude to change, you know, so that what is happening in me and to me, and I'm also responsible for what happens out there.
I don't know whether or not I've just been wrapped in cotton, person or whatever, but it appears to me, perhaps because my eyes have been open, that there's just an awful lot of people that are suddenly have an urgency towards this spiritual journey. And I'm just wondering whether or not you're seeing larger numbers, masses of people, like there's a collective consciousness or something that is drawing us closer to our God.
Yes. I think that's called, and this is done by some exegesis and historians recently, that the universe, the human organism in the universe, throughout the universe, is experiencing heightened consciousness. And what we say in the spiritual tradition, in the Christian Catholic tradition, is that's the Spirit of God moving over the waters of the earth and the people and in the universe, heightening their consciousness, making them aware, sort of awakening them from a sleep to another level of being in the world. See? And that's, to me, to be alive today, and this is so terribly exciting, to be awakened, you know. And last night, you know, for myself, my personal journey, I said that, at age 59, I had this marvelous job, good-paying job, lovely family, you know, I'm doing all the things, you know, that are comfortable and sweet. And I make a retreat with Father Thomas in New Mexico, this 16-day contemplative retreat, and I fall right off the cliff. And he says to me, well, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? I'm 59 years old and, you know, comfortable. And I said, well, I'm going to continue work till Social Security, and I'm going to retire, and I'm going to see my family. And he said, oh, is that what you're going to do? And I said, Tom, I'm 59 years old. He said, oh, well. He said, I thought maybe you might want to share the spiritual journey now. I said, not really. No. I mean, no, I don't want to get into that stuff, you know. And he said, oh, well. He said, oh, by the way, what would it take for you to do that? And very spontaneously, off the top of my head, I said, a real good-paying part-time job. He said, really? I said, yeah, I'd work a couple of days for transmitting this prayer. There was no such thing as contemplative outreach at that time. That's 10 years ago. Yeah, I would share this prayer with other people, sure, if I had a good-paying part-time job. Now, the day before that retreat ended, there was this gentleman on the retreat with us, and we all bonded. It was an extraordinary happening for us. And Bob came over to me, and he said, Mary, I understand that if you had a good-paying part-time job, you know, you would do some of this work. And I said, oh, Bob, I only said that to shut him up, you know. I mean, I wasn't serious about that, you know. I said, you know, I have to support myself with gas in the car. I'm the dwelling. I'm a single woman. And he said, I didn't mention this before, but I'm the president of this particular company, and I was very impressed. And he said, are you familiar with Plainview on Long Island, that little town? I said, I live there. So we said, well, if you want a good-paying part-time job, you've got it. If you can do this work. And I said, oh, I'm just kidding. I wasn't going to do any part-time. I just want to get my car and go home. Because the retreat we spent, and it was very primitive. We only had outhouses and little pots in the room and gang showers, you know, if the sun was shining, we got hot water because it was solar. We're very primitive. I mean, you talk about being stripped, you know. So I get home, and a week later, I get a call from Bob, and he said, oh, well, have you decided how much you need? Oh, I said, Bob, please, I'm not doing this kind of work. You know, I have a little prayer group. I'm happy. I'm doing, you know, a little bit. I don't need anything. Following week, another call and another call. And that was like September, October, November. And then Thomas came to town in December, and he said, I understand you were offered a good part-time paying job. What is your answer? I really fell apart. I said, I can't decide that. I mean, you know, I made a nice salary. You know, I was making $60,000 a year. What did I need? I was paying $200 a month rent. I had a lovely life. And I said, oh, I've just, he said, well, maybe you could just do it once. have a group together. So he said, I'm coming back in January. We could talk about it. So from December the 6th to January, I put together a little brochure, which took me about an hour, on who, what, why, when, and how, centering prayer, you know, people who want the contemplative journey. We did not have these books. There was just copies of paper that came out of that retreat. There was nothing put down on paper. There was just my own personal experience and then my experience with him. So when he came, I had this little brochure-like thing, and he read it. And I said, well, what do you think? Do you think it'll work? It's like a little nervous about the whole thing. And he said, well, there's just one correction. You spelled centering wrong in this third paragraph. He said, just correct that and then do it. And that's exactly what I did. We had 25 people for the first retreat. We had a 20 people waiting for another one. So it's that movement, you know, into taking a risk, you know. So I took the part-time job, left my job, took the part-time job, worked at Contemplative Outreach. It came together, formed itself, and then I was the executive director for a while. And then after a year, a little over a year, I moved into community. So that, I just want to show you the process of this transformation. Well, I'm 67 years old. And this is, it just continues. Transformation just continues. It's terribly exciting. And what do? I do my spiritual practices. And I come out and I share it with everyone. I had to make that, I just wanted to share that with you. You need to let go to get something better, you know, something greater for you, you know. So, what we did this morning was we looked at some spiritual practices. We looked at intention and consent on a personal level, and that you people will, you know, be with that with yourself. Where are you? What is your intention? And get very specific. I mean, God knows your intention, but do you? And what are the actions are you taking on your spiritual journey? What are the simple spiritual practices? We did centering prayer. We even did a 5 minutes of meditation walking, you know, bringing the centeredness, the recollection into some kind of activity. And then we did Lectio Divina, divine reading, and we shared on that. We shared your experiences of how the word formed you just for that half hour. And then it's going to continue in your life. And now what we want to do is look at the act of prayer. Now, the act of prayer is the name that Thomas gave to this particular prayer. 100 years ago, it was called aspirational prayer. Does anybody remember that in our tradition? Do you remember ejaculation? An aspiration, that's what that is. My experience is the breath prayer. It's called the breath prayer or the aspirational prayer in the Western Latin Church. The breath prayer is the name of this particular prayer in the Eastern rites of the Christian Church, the Orthodox churches, the Byzantine, the Marianites, which were part of the Roman Church, the Western Church, except their emphasis is on liturgy and the breath of God, the Spirit of God in us. That's where the emphasis is on the Eastern rites of the church. And everything they do is part of the breath, part of ritual. It's so rich and exciting. If you ever have an opportunity to go to a Byzantine church for liturgy, it is Christian. It's part of the universal Christian church, but it's the Eastern part, which I think is where it all began. I don't think it began in the West. I think it began in Antioch and Alexandria. You know, I think it all began with the Spirit on, you know, with the monks, with John the Evangelist going over to the Eastern, you know, Turkey and Syria and Lebanon, you know. Those marvelous Christian churches. They were very much into the Spirit. You see, the first 800 years of the church was the Spirit, the activity of God, grace was what it was about. And you entered into it through consent and intention. So what are we doing now? We're renewing that tradition in the church. So the active prayer, or the breath prayer, which I call it, is a way of being in the present moment or praying unceasingly. It does not require thinking about the prayer or the prayer phrase, and it isn't about taking it apart and analyzing it, you know, like the study of exegesis, where this word means this and that word means that. It's not about theology. It's about experiencing the Spirit of God as your breath. Just think of it. The Spirit of God is the breath. If you have halitosis, there's something wrong inside. Some disturbance going on inside that's creating a breath that needs to be healed. Interesting. It's not really symbolic, but there's real some grounding in that. So your breath and my breath is the Spirit of God. Without the breath, you're no longer in the body, isn't that right? The body is the holder, the container for the Spirit, for the breath of God. Right here. That's, you know, Paul had trouble with the physical body, you know, because he knew and understood how the Spirit dwells within this temple of God, this body. We hold the Spirit. And we breathe in and we breathe out the Spirit. And it transforms us. Now, in the Hesychast tradition, in the eastern parts of the Christian church, you have that famous Jesus prayer. It wasn't created in the Western church. It was in the eastern rites of the Christian church, which is all part of our heritage. That's our inheritance. That's our roots. And then it goes further back into Judaism, right, where the Spirit was Ruach, moving in us, the activity of God out there once we enter into communion with the Spirit, or we become aware that our very breath and the activity of God is within us, ready to be opened, unleashed out there. How do we do that? How do we do that in our tradition, in our culture, in this contemporary time? What we do is we intentionally allow the Spirit to create in us a simple 7 to 9 syllable simple prayer phrase that we intentionally practice and say unceasingly. And you must do that joyfully. You must do that with joy in your heart, because it's going to go from your head as something intellectual, something that's surfaced to our consciousness. And as we repeat it and continue to repeat it, just like we do our breathing, if we don't breathe, we're dead. So that it becomes part of our very breath or our activity, and it moves from the head, you know, and through the throat where we articulate it, into the heart, into the chamber of our heart. And then when you get very busy and you can't say it consciously, it says itself. It resonates deep within you. And it's praying you as you get very busy answering the phone, doing the things you need to do. And then when there's a moment and a space again, it'll surface. And then you say it again intentionally, over and over again. And what happens is it becomes actualized in your life. It becomes a part of you. Your body, the physical body, receives a message. Jesus, fill me with your love and mercy, over and over and over again. In the beginning, out loud, sing it, chant it, dance to it, walk to it. Joyfully, the body and the unconscious gets the message, filled with Jesus' love and mercy. And it manifests itself out there as I'm relating to people and to work in my life. So it becomes a part of my being, the the transmitters in my body between my cells are absorbing this information as a reality and a truth, and then it manifests itself. It's called reconditioning those early childhood programs. In other words, here we are evacuating, allowing the Lord to heal us. Then what are we putting into it now? Do you think it's going to stay in a vacuum, the unconscious? No. So it's our work in union, in communion with the Spirit, to pray unceasingly. Paul had that incredible awareness and insight. We don't know how to pray, and we don't know what to pray for. Let the Spirit pray us. So there's a reconditioning going on. There's no vacuum or emptiness there. There's a reconditioning. As I say the prayer, my body absorbs it, and it's being transmitted to my brain, into my physical and mind body. It's getting a message. It's being reconditioned. So that's what Thomas says when he says, when you do the act of prayer or the breath prayer, you are erasing some of those emotional programs, and you're putting into it prayer, a way of being in the world. It must be done joyfully and for whatever you need. 7 to 9 syllable simple phrase. Whatever it is you need now in your spiritual growth. There were times in my life where I needed to be patient. Jesus, fill me with your patience over and over again. And when I wasn't able to say it because I was very busy doing something else, concentrating, being with what I was doing in the present moment, I could hear it resonating within me. Like pulsating. It's like my breathing was the prayer. My breath was the prayer.
This is the end of side one. Please stop your machine now and turn the cassette over.
And I'd wake up in the morning, and what do you think was on my lips? My breath prayer. First thing that came out of my mouth, I was so pleasing and charming to have that company in the morning. My own breath saying the prayer, you know. And then when there were some very, very, very stressful moments, sometimes my response to people, you know, before I would respond, there would be this soft breath prayer that would say itself, that I could hear deeper than me. Very, very important spiritual practice, because it's your participation with the Spirit and the reconditioning of those programs that the Spirit is erasing. That's part of transformation. Okay? Now, any questions, observations? Yes, please.
I'm very familiar with Jesus' prayer. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about, where it does itself.
Right.
Now, but you said something else that really intrigued me. And it seems to be a little bit different than what Father Thomas says in his book.
Yeah.
He kind of says, get it and stay with it.
Yeah.
And it takes a while, you know, to get it.
Yeah.
But you seem to say, do what you need, which may not be, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. I mean, we always need that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, I hear exactly what you're saying. So I'm saying to you that if there's something that you consciously need or want, it's almost petitional, isn't it? Is that what that woman did when she touched his robe? Did she go there to be healed? She had an intention, didn't she? Do we? See, I think God knows what we need and surfaces within us that need to our awareness and consciousness, and then we say yes by saying it. So it's a little different than what Thomas says. Matter of fact, I brought him the breath prayers.
Okay,
just want you to know that. And he added a few in Latin or something, which I don't know where he got that from. But anyway.
The person thought they had a need.
Yes. Yeah.
And they, would you recommend that they express that need rather than the Jesus prayer?
Oh, well, I would not use the Jesus prayer.
That's what I meant.
Because that to me is just not part of it. It's the part that I just mentioned can be replaced by the Jesus prayer. Now, as a matter of fact, the Jesus prayer originally is, Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. The sinner business was added on by somebody else. that had nothing to do with the Jesus prayer. So make it short. Make it your need. Present it. Put it out there. That's the action and the consent. God knows what we need. We're the ones that have to articulate it in order to be aware of it and then to receive it from God.
Well, then you would be, you could conceivably be changing it quite frequently.
Not necessarily. I don't believe in 15 years, and that's when I first entered into this breath prayer, that I have had more than four. And the four have been actualized. And what happens to me, it may not happen to you, is that that prayer disappears. Matter of fact, I shared that with Thomas about 7 years ago. It just, I can't even remember what it was. Like I say, what was it? It's gone. Why is it gone? It's been it's been actualized. And then another one surfaces. You do not have to have express your need to the Lord in that prayer. You don't have to do that. It's helpful if you do it, you know, in the actualization process. You may use something theological or philosophical, my God and my all, you know, something like that. Whatever, you know.
Are you saying it doesn't matter?
What I'm saying is that you may use either one. I didn't say it doesn't matter. Whatever it is that you have that needs to surface in you, go with it. That's the Spirit working in you, Fred.
I picked up something that I've been using. I started out the way you're saying with the act of prayer. Then I Father Carlo Rico mentioned Father Keating suggesting to him the phrase, here I am.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking about that, and I took that on as my act of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it is a continuation of the consent and the surrender. I
mean, right.
That's the implied thing. When I say, here I am, you know, I'm jogging, I'm walking somewhere, I say, here I am.
Right, right. Don't get hung up too much on the phrase. Remember, it's the spiritual practice. You know, if it's philosophical or theological, whatever, wherever you're at, just do it, you know. Let me take your test first. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. Yeah. And all you have to do is take a moment to reflect back. Is it actualized? Is that really what's happening in my life? We don't usually do that. You know, we don't usually say, is it really happening yet? You know, yes is fine. I can't just breathe like, yes. Yeah. That would stunt my breathing. You know, I just needed something like seven, you know. Yes. Okay. Very good. There's a difference, isn't there? Yes. Don't grasp and struggle with it. Just let go. Be free. Yes. Then you become the yes, you know? Yes. Mark, you something?
Yeah. I like Fred's way because here I am, because if you think about it, we really don't always know what's best for us.
Exactly.
God does.
Right.
So by not having any stipulation on it, you're saying, I know you know what's best for me.
Right.
You know, or whatever, but something without asking for a particular.
Yeah. Well, don't be afraid to ask, though. If you come to a point in your life.
But either he'll know it's more important for us, right?
But he may also inspire you to say it. Don't ever limit God. If it's yes, you know, if it's nothing, if it's whatever.
Real
specific sometimes. No, it's okay. So it's not so much that we're not looking to get that or to have that happen, but it's the act of faith, which is exercising faith, you know.
Well, one of the prayers that Seth had me remember that came to me recently because of my will trying to control things.
Yeah.
I start to see my body getting tight.
Yeah.
This and that. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Let go.
This is my breathing.
Yeah. Well, it's your yes and his let go. I think that we don't want you to pick up anybody else's things here. You know, that's important. It is on one level, very deep level. But you see, that's what it's about, yes. And your intention in that let go is what's being transmitted, you know, to your body, to your unconscious, you know.
Did you ever wake up without a prayer?
Oh, sure, I wake up with curses in my mouth.
I mean, what I mean is...
just want you to know I'm human.
I understand that, but did you tell us about the patient?
Taken
care of, right?
Yeah.
So now you don't need that, or after that, right? You need something else, maybe. You don't need that.
Yeah, I don't think about it.
Did you not have an aspiration? Did you go get
it? Oh, no, I always have an aspiration, but I don't necessarily create it right there. It surfaces for me very, very gently from within, And I'd say, ah, that's it. Okay.
So you're kind of on the lookout.
No. No, I'm always aware in the present moment, if I can be, of the movement and of the promptings of the spirit. That's what the journey does to you. It makes you aware, awake, and then you respond. You cannot respond if you're asleep. You need to be aware. So my breath prayer keeps me aware, you know, praying unceasing, I think. Does it keep you in the present and peaceful? Is there an openness, you know? Then that's the effect of praying unceasingly, however you do that, you know. It's just recommended that this marvelous spiritual practice of aspirational prayer that was taught at one time, it wasn't to hammer it out. You weren't supposed to be thinking about it and tearing it apart and looking at it. You're just simply supposed to be saying it, praying unceasingly. Okay? So it permeates your being. Okay? Or it's not to get you any kind of indulgences or get in with God in the right way, you know. Or is it part of salvation? It's just a part of being. It's beingness. You know, it's not salvation because I say it. You know, like that wonderful monk or that wonderful person in the way of the pilgrim, he had to say it so many thousands of times. That was really so that it would permeate. They didn't know about unconscious at that time and all that. But that was the wisdom was that it would permeate the person's being and then pray itself. See? That's the wisdom of it, of praying unceasingly. But it's, isn't it wonderful, right? Mm-hmm.
A prayer that you sort of developed.
Great, great. Mm-hmm. Good. Good for you. Just stay with what you're doing. If it changes itself, then it's time for a change. That's what the spirit is saying. See, we're talking about a spiritual journey where we're really in tune and in touch with the spirit of God within us, moving us, changing us, you know, whatever that change needs to be.
One more question. Father Thomas came here years ago, and I remember him being asked by one of the audience, how, if they should pray before sinners, pray for my mother, my sister, myself,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. And he said, no, do your sinning prayer because that covers all your bases.
Exactly. The sacred word is a symbol of petitional prayer, you know, aspirational prayer. The symbol, the word, your sacred word is a container for all of those activities as you enter into the presence of God. So that's absolutely right.
So you're praying for the world, essentially.
Well, if you're praying for the world, yes.
If that's your intention.
If that's your intention. Somebody else may not be. Okay. See, well, how uniquely personal this kind of prayer is, the contemplative journey. It's very personal, very intimate. It's your prayer, your journey, together with other companions. But it is very intimate and very personal.
Again, just for my information and confirmation, too, because I was part of an intercessory prayer.
Yes.
Where you would pray for
exactly. Right.
You know, or
mm-hmm.
tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Does that be included in the same context?
As far as in centering prayer in the sacred word, it is, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't pray petitional prayer when you're out of it. I mean, if you want to hold someone in your heart who's ill or that you want to intercede for, you take them into your heart. Remember that the heart entrance, the entrance to this chamber of love where the Spirit of God dwells, you know the Sacred Heart of Jesus? You can get past the bloody heart into the opening. What you're going to get is an entrance into the bosom of the Lord. That's the entrance. That's why it shows the wonderful artwork except for that bloodiness, you know. If you could get into that beyond the appearances of things, you enter into the chamber of love in the presence of God. It happens to be right here. We didn't create it. I mean, this is the way we created. This is what God did. This is the entrance. Take them, petitional prayer. Take the person into your heart, or persons, or universe, or be there, in there, in the silence. Enter into the chamber of love, into the presence of God. It happens to be through the bosom, which is between the breasts. That's the bosom. That's where John laid his head, on the bosom of Jesus. We talk about the bosom of Abraham. That's the entrance into the chamber, into that internal life. That's where it is. Enter into it. Take your focus into it. Move into it. And rest in God with your petitions. And if at any point someone does need some kind of prayer, from that area, from that chamber, is transmitted these vibrations of love. You've seen the pictures of the Sacred Heart of Jesus with the rays coming out. Someone had to have seen that in order for that to happen. That's what it's about. And our great Eastern teachers, and when I say Eastern, you know, the Buddhists and the Hindus. And they talk about being open to divine love. And some people, like Solomon, pray for wisdom. So all this energy goes into the mind, you see, into the intuitive part of the body. And yet in their hearts, they can be pretty shallow. And what these teachers say, go to the heart. Go into divine love. Enter into the bosom of the Lord and the Spirit. You're entering into the Trinity. Dwell there. Live from that spot, that area. What helps you do that? Simple practices. Because it's not a head thing, if you notice. We haven't done anything too intellectual today. A lot of experiential, you know, but intuitive, but nothing too brilliant. You can't get a doctorate on what we said today. But you can sure get healed and transformed, you know. Okay? So the bosom, that's the aspirational prayer. From the lungs, from the bosom. And if you even look at the cage of the lungs, it's almost like a cathedral, like a Gothic cathedral, that entrance into the bosom. Rest in the bosom. That's contemplative prayer. Relax. Rest. So, anything else on the active prayer? You have a general, you know, and of course Thomas has some active prayers in the book, Open Mind, Open Heart. I recommend that you allow the Spirit, work with the Spirit and create your own, because it's so individual and so personal, you know. Okay? But remember, the most important thing is your attitude, and the attitude must be one of faith and joy and of receiving. Okay? It goes beyond belief. Believing that the Spirit of God dwells within you is nothing. It's shallow. What is a belief system? What is a belief? I mean, I believe that there's a hobby airport here. You know, I just happen to have experienced it now. But I believed it before I got here. I knew that. Fred says there's a hobby airport. I thought that's a silly name, but anyway. I'll go there. I'll buy a ticket for there, for hobby. You know? I thought, that's silly. But I'll go. I believe Fred when he said there's an airport there. You know? But I had to go beyond that. I had to buy a ticket to Hobby. And I thought, oh, that's funny. I bought a ticket to Hobby. Okay. And then I had to get on the plane to get here. So the belief system is very shallow. It's the first rung on the ladder to this union with God, God consciousness. You have to do more than that. Put some energy into it. That's what praying unceasingly is. Resting in the bosom of the Lord. It's the action of my belief, my consent. Okay? So, I'll give you just one quick example. I go to a maximum security prison every month where I teach them all the spiritual practices. And these men are in there, you know, 25 years to life. So, I don't know what the crimes are, but that's not important. The important thing is that the men that do come are open to wanting to live differently than they've ever lived before. So when I give them the active prayer and I give them the letting go, open mind and open heart, and they talk about, and we come back, you know, and they practice during the month, and then we come back again, and they share with me how there were guards that, you know, treated them terribly, you know. And, of course, it was always the guards' problem, not theirs. And they get into this praying unceasingly and centering prayer, and they say, boy, those guards have changed. You know, things are a lot different around here, you know. Those guards are really great, you know. So you see, that's that transformation process that's taking place. Then I say to them, well, it's really not the guards. Do you know who it is? And then they very reluctantly say, yeah, I guess so. I guess it is me, you know, something. So the change is our change. And then there's a difference in the world out there, you know. So it's a very powerful prayer, praying unceasingly.
Terry, I feel moved to say, to make one little addition, because it just came to my mind. And, you know, I know Brother King, some of his faith, he uses the God as in the midst of corruption. And, you know, it's amazing how that transformation can take place. You don't have to be pure and purified for the transformation to take place.
Exactly.
You know, you can be in the totally devastated and in the midst of corruption itself. And perhaps even morally, or however you want to see yourself as morally wrong, or whatever it is. And the prayer can lift you out of that.
Exactly.
It's just enough so that the transformation can happen.
Exactly. It's so extraordinary. And I see this, that I'm doing this 3 years. I could write a book on just the experiences of these inmates and the changes in their life, you know, in prison as well as their relatives on the outside. Just, I mean, the prayer practices, my friends, are all we have. It's only God who makes things happen. And all we are called to do is practice faithfully. A couple of whatever, you know, and just do them, you know, and then watch God work. So I think what we'll do is take a little break and come back for the prayer of forgiveness. That's another spiritual practice.